Please welcome Dr. Reverend Guy.
This weekend, I had an opportunity to teach in the School of Ministry. And I teach, one of the classes that I teach in the School of Ministry is the Metaphysical Bible. I love teaching the Metaphysical Bible. Would you guys be interested in the Metaphysical Bible if I ever taught a class here? Okay, good to know that. I'll keep that in my little list of things to see and do here. So anyway, the song reminded me of one of the students in the class. Her favorite saying is, "Know the truth, and it will set you free." Kind of like if you knew the truth, if you knew the you that you don't know, if you knew the truth, it would set you free. So the question then I asked her as I said, "Well, what does that mean? What does that mean, know the truth? Is it like there's a magic key or code? Is there something to discover? And we spend our life looking for it like the Holy Grail, and then it gives us this idea of freedom from what or to do." So I played with it for a while because, you know, if you look at the words, what they mean, and if you were basically to translate that, it would essentially come down to, if you were awake, you would have agency. Because in Greek, the word for truth is a word called aletheia, and the Gospel of John was written in Greek. All the Gospels were written in Greek. And so the word is aletheia, which means to not forget, as in lethargy or the river Lethe. The river Lethe in Greek mythology is when souls are born, they cross over this river. We all cross over this river, according to the Greek mythology. And we enter into this world in a state of amnesia. And it's all about waking up, remembering. And if we're awake, we have freedom. Because if we are asleep, we're kind of in bondage. We're kind of going through an ignorance. So if you knew the truth that you don't know, if you were awake, you would have agency, ability, expansion, curiosity. I just think that's kind of a cool thought. And had nothing to do with my talk, but it kind of has something to do with my talk. But I just love when you did that song. And now to try to make another segue to kind of like to start the talk, which is to talk about two things. So, because then I'll go into the biohacky thing too, which is about how the mind works. Because I'm always fascinated how I just think it's remarkable that we have the capacity to communicate with each other, to talk, to do the things. Not only that, just life itself is such an incredible miracle at every level. You know, coming home from Hawaii and watching our dogs so excited. First of all, coming back from Hawaii, do you know what that means? It means sitting in a tube and flying through the air. And landing someplace else, you know, in a matter of hours that it used to take other people like weeks or months to do. So anyway, I'm kind of in that mode. And two things have just been images in my mind that have been leading me to think about a couple things. And the first one has to do with being in Kauai. Which was a lovely time, and it was a lovely trip, and we saw people that we knew and loved, and it was all good. But the thing that stands out the most is one evening we were on the North Shore and saw the starry world, the canopy of heaven, as I've never seen it before. Maybe in Wyoming once, but there's a level of absence of light that causes the canopy of heaven to stand out in a place that catches your breath, caught my breath. It moved me into this place of amazement and wonder and awe to see this vastness that just lures you into it. And, you know, it got me thinking about things, you know, thinking about this, you know, sitting in a tube and flying through the air kind of thing. It's like, when we were going to Hawaii, I had a thought. Michelle and I have these crazy thoughts about airplanes that we know are totally illogical, but we have them anyways. Like, I generally don't sleep on airplanes because I think that there's going to ask me to fly the plane, so I need to stay alert, sober. I know that's never going to happen, but you know how your mind does kind of goofy things. But this other thing is like, how did they find Hawaii in the air? Meaning, how easy it would be. It's a tiny little island in this huge ocean. And I know that they have navigation and they can do it, but it just amazes me that you get someplace. But I thought about that in Hawaii because, you know, in this wide open sea, how these islands were discovered is that people got into dugout canoes and paddled hundreds, if not thousands, of miles and found these islands and then went back to their other island and then went back to this island. And they didn't have GPS, they don't have cell phones, they didn't even have compasses. But they were so in tune to the land itself, the ocean itself, the body itself, that they were able to navigate through the starry world, through the movement of waves, through, you know, some say talking to the sea and to the creatures that are in the sea. But there was this capacity of navigation, of being able to do these kinds of things, this level of agency, of being so awake, so attuned to something, it's quite miraculous. And it's, you know, it's not just the Polynesians, because all of our ancestors lived in a world where they saw the starry world all the time. All of our mythology is built on this. Our concept of reality is grounded in our ability to experience ourselves. You know, this capacity to fully occupy the space that we occupy and to feel a sense of connection to it. And so we built so much of our world around that. In fact, this evening begins Rosh Hashanah, Jewish New Year, which is based on a lunar calendar that the ancient Hebrews used as they navigated the starry world, which is all about Rosh Hashanah means, you know, the head of the year. It's the beginning of the year. And it's kind of like our ecclesiastical year, too. We begin, you know, we begin our annual theme in September, generally to go along with this idea of new year, new beginning, something happening. And what's really cool, I think, about Rosh Hashanah is it's not just the new year, but it's the birthday of the universe. Isn't that a thought? You know, that because, you know, before there was time, before there was a universe, there wasn't time. You know, there was something called the singularity, which I don't even know what that means, something to the effect of the laws of physics just don't apply. But I don't think that it started. Who knows when it started? We can't say that it started because there was no time when it started. And it had to be created before there could be time. But and I don't want to go too far down that rabbit hole. Because I'm watching myself go down that rabbit hole. But just this idea that we celebrate a participation in an ever-evolving, ever-awakening universe in which we are part of it. And, you know, here it is a new moon, and here it is New Year's. And New Year's is a time, this, you know, in this culture, in Rosh Hashanah, it's the 10 days of awe and wonder and amazement to contemplate the year that is passing and to set navigation to the year that we're going. And so it's appropriate for all of us to think about, where am I? Where am I? And where do I think I'm going? And I don't know about you, but I certainly feel like I'm at a crossroads in my life. I really do. And what I sense is I'm not alone in this. And I also know that our community is at a crossroads. Crossroads aren't bad things. They just simply mean that there's something else that's wanting to emerge. They can be scary because change is always scary. And often at a crossroads, you know, I did a I was doing a reading on the I Ching on kind of this crossroads that I'm at, you know, and it was really interesting because the image that it created, it says, you know, like a dry lake bed with crows. You know, that sense of, if you feel that sense of depletion or that sense of confusion or that sense that something is missing, it's easy to have these external things pick at you, you know? Do you know what I'm talking about? It's kind of like if you're distracted, if you're not fully occupying the space that you're occupying, it's really easy to see these little external things become bothersome. And I think that they become bothersome because we sometimes don't know where we're going. But what I said 2 weeks ago is I think the most powerful, I know for myself, the most powerful words, the most powerful mantra for me when I'm entering into the creative process is to say, I don't know. I don't know. Because when I can say that and feel it in my body, I don't know. I'm teachable. I'm no longer in judgment. But I'm curious. I'm open. I'm expansive. And something else can come along. Wendell Berry says it this way. He says, it may be that when we no longer know which way to go, we have come to our real journey. When we don't know where we're going, sometimes it's the beginning of the journey, because everything else has sort of been structured and amazed, you know, organized around a thought, a belief, an idea, you know, and we're so good at that. Are we not at trying to hold everything within a certain parameter of how it's supposed to be? And then something comes along and how it was supposed to be isn't how it is. And then the fun begins. Because, you know, then we're open to something else, a new thought, a new way of being, and what we're going to do and where that's going to be. And that brings me to this second image that's sitting in my mind. So I was going through Twitter the other day, and I saw this short film clip. And it had to do with a restaurant in Brazil. It was a security camera that was looking at this outside restaurant where these people were sitting. And what had happened is that a CrossFit group, y'all know what CrossFit is? It's like an exercise programs and clubs, and they meet in certain different places. Anyway, this CrossFit group all decided to get up and go take a run. And they ran by this restaurant. And everybody in the restaurant got up and ran with them because they didn't know what was going on. And they figured they. So you see this, you see these people running by, and then you see everybody in the restaurant get up and leaving their plates and everything, and they're running. No one knows where they're going. They don't even know when they're running from or to. They just don't want to, you know. Søren Kierkegaard says it this way. He says, the majority of people are not so afraid of holding a wrong opinion as they are of holding an opinion alone. Let me say that again. The majority of people are not so afraid of holding a wrong opinion as they are of holding an opinion alone. We're like lemmings, right? It's like, if everybody's running, I need to be running with them. In New Thought, we call that the collective consciousness, the group mind. It's the mind that when we are asleep is the one that's thinking through us. And we all participate in that in some way or another. You know, because there needs to be, it's important to have a certain level of vigilance, because if we're not thinking, someone or something is thinking through us. And we all know when it happens, because we start talking in terms that are very global, like, well, you know, all those fill in the blank are this fill in the blank. All men are, all women are, all these people or that people or this, they're that. And it's the group conscious. And the group conscious is simply always responding, you know, to it's always reacting. It's a restaurant of people sitting around having a delightful time, totally unconscious of what they're doing. Yes, I'll have another glass of wine, blah, 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 blah. And a group of people run by and everybody gets up and runs with them without thinking why. But how many other times do any of us in this room find ourselves doing something, maybe not quite as absurd, but only by degree, just as goofy, jumping up, running to a conclusion, finding something, all worked up about something that we haven't even thought through. So, as Kierkegaard said, it's this fear not so much of having a wrong opinion, but having our own opinion. Because, that's the thing about being human, is our own agency, our own sense of being. And the courage to live our life, to fully occupy the space that we're occupying, and what that looks like and what that feels like, and it's scary. Because we're afraid, and probably will, fail. How many of you have ever failed in your life? How many people have failed big? You know, big, like lost a car or a business or a relationship or something like that. Failed big, yeah. The bigger, the better. What the I Ching, what the I Ching says is this. It says, to never fail in life is to fail in the biggest way. That's your mantra for the week. Breathe that one in. To never have failed, to never fail in life is to fail in the biggest way. Why is that? Because you don't risk. You don't step out of your comfort zone. Of course, you know, we have this whole morality in our competitive society about success and failure. But I like to term it like this. It's not so much in life there's success and failure, but there's sweet and sour, right? There are different flavors about life. If you take the morality out of it, the best lessons we've ever learned have been when we have failed. When we're successful, we're just kind of going along with anything. We're not really processing much. But when we fail at something, we stop and look. And that's how we grow. Watch a child walk. They're falling most of the time. And then it's like they get this way, and it's like, oh, I can't get that way. You get this way. And then finally, they're able to navigate themselves up. Remember when you were driving a car? Or learning how to drive a car? Wow, all those things. And yet we learn, we adjust, we calculate, we bring it in, and then finally we get it. The sweet and the sour of life. It's how we begin to do that. And so here we all are at our own individual and collective crossroads. And the invitation is, what is luring you? Because if we live in a universe where everything is interconnected to everything else, and we can say that spiritually, or we can address that from a quantum field, it doesn't matter what language you look at or use, but if everything is interconnected to everything else, then everything in it matters, which means in your life, the life of your family, your tribe, your community, your nation, your planet, you matter. And all of us are feeding into this collective mind in some way, by every response that we do. Think of something that's crazy going on in the world today that you're tracking. You're participating in that. You are. I am. Even whether you agree with it or don't agree with it, every time you go online and click, you're feeding something. Every time you go into a store and buy, You're feeding something. Every time you pay attention to something, whether you like it or not, you're feeding something. We're all doing it. Back in the 80s, I remember I was living through the AIDS crisis at the time, and I remember there was a book around, and it was called You Can't Afford the Luxury of a Negative Thought. And I can't think of a more appropriate, I wonder if that book, the book is probably still in print, but I can't think of a more appropriate title now, that none of us can afford the luxury of a negative thought. And that doesn't mean being, you know, goofy and Pollyanna. It means being awake and paying attention to what we're paying attention to. And if it's working us up and bringing us to fear or getting us distracted from what is possible, then we need to stop paying attention to it and paying attention to other things like possibilities. And the biggest lie, it's one of the oldest lies, is, well, I don't matter. What's it to me? You know, this global warming thing, this political thing, this economic thing, what does that have to do with me? What does my attention have to do? St. Teresa of Avila would address the same thing to her sisters. She would say, you guys need to go back to the kitchen and peel potatoes because you're not ready yet. Because your ego is in the way. Your, as Emerson says, your bloated sense of nothingness is in the way. If you're thinking in terms of I matter or I don't matter, of course you matter. Let it go and move on. Of course you matter. When you don't show up, it matters. When you are engaged, it matters. If you spend 5 minutes a day praying for the world, it matters. If you choose to be unconscious, it matters. You matter. And what you are attending to matters. Thomas Merton, good old Thomas Merton, says this. Set me free from the laziness that goes about disguised as activity when activity is not required of me. And from the cowardice that does what it is not demanded in order to escape sacrifice. In other words, we're so busy doing when maybe we should be praying. Or we're so busy doing something else that we should be paying attention to what we're paying attention to. Because every thought matters. And none of us can afford the luxury of a negative thought. Because when we are awake, we have agency. The truth will set you free. So let's pray on that. So let's just take this moment to open our heart and mind to that infinite presence, that infinite wisdom, that good that is luring us into the greatest experience of who we are. Let us be aware that this amazing thing called life desires the full expression of who we are. And that if we are open and curious to that, it will guide us. And so we bless this day in that consciousness, giving thanks, letting it be. And so it is. Thank you.